Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive, our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions there for you, taking care of all things clean water. That's why you find them at 800 Clean Water. We keep the water around here. You never know when you might need some stock. I'm shuffling off to Buffalo on Saturday night. At least I believe I am. COVID be damned. Luke Jones and I monitoring all things Ravens. We're now into Festivus week. Luke, I know you were very adamant online about coaching decisions over the weekend, and certainly Mike Tomlin made some boo-boos, Mike Vrabel on the 4th and 2. To punt or not to punt, and analytics or no analytics, and it's fascinating to me to hear a guy like you argue for and against analytics at any given point, and to see real-time Twitter, all the coaches on Twitter go crazy every time something like this happens.
Well, it's really interesting to see the juxtaposition between the more old school way of thinking, the more conventional thinking that you've seen over time as it relates to coaching decisions and as it relates to how we as media and fans react to them.
Would that be gut feel? Is that the kind of coach you're talking about?
Yeah. Gut feel and frankly, groupthink. Idea of punting. When you're well into your opponent's territory, short of being in a 4th and 13 or 4th and 10, something like that, the analytics say if you're in 4th and short, talking 4th and 1, 4th and 2, go for it way more than they do.
Pitting them in is not real, is what you're saying.
It is, but what are you gaining out of it? So I think what we saw on
not
Sunday,
possession of the ball,
there were decisions on Saturday. But there were decisions over the course of the weekend where you ask yourself, and this is where we need to really start thinking about this. If we want to, and when I say we're talking about media and fans, we're not the ones making the decision. And that's very important to recognize. We're not the ones making decisions and having the outcomes of games impact our livelihood moving forward. So I always acknowledge that, always have great respect for coaches in that regard. But one thing that I think this kind of came to a head for the Ravens here in Baltimore and John Harbaugh here in Baltimore, kind of going back to that Kansas City game early last season when they were going for it on 4th downs. And what I want people to really start thinking about a little bit more, if we want to, I don't want to say evolve, but improve from a decision-making standpoint and understanding what these coaches are trying to do, every decision matters. And every decision you make improves your chances to win a football game or lessens your chances to win a football game. And fully understanding, there's a lot at work. Who's healthy? Who's on the field at that point? Who just went to the locker room because he's cramping? What personnel has worked effectively? What play
calling? How are we playing right now would be the gut feel, right?
Like, are factors, sure, but one thing that we really that has become so illuminating to me is how many coaches are just so risk averse, and for whatever reason, we equate prolonging the game and playing with overtime as though that's winning. Playing for overtime does not mean you're going to win. So when you see a situation like what Frank Reich did on Saturday, when you're in a position, you're down 14 and you score a touchdown and go for 2 late. And again, you're trailing by 14 points with not a whole lot of time left. The thought is you're trying to improve your chances to win in in regulation and not even get to overtime. Now, bringing it back to what I'm talking about with Mike Vrabel. And as you mentioned, Mike Tomlin certainly was second guest. And
by the way, the broadcasters don't do a great job of explaining it the way you just did. They braze over it, and generally they're old school. I was going to call them old and white, but that's a baseball thing. They're old school, whoever they are, because we've all been ingratiated to these decisions and pinning them in. And yeah, you punt from the 38-yard line because you don't have a kicker that can make a 55-yard field goal. Well, whatever that thing is. And when we kicked the 52-yard field goal, I started to get nerdy with you. I started pinging you on Twitter and somebody sent me the chart. And by the way, I could hold this up or I could actually bring it up on the Zoom, but 52 yards is the field goal that's the worst percentage because it's the one that they try the most. because at the 35, it makes you 52. It makes you try it. So there's more 52s and there's more missed than there are 53s or 51s, strangely enough. But I looked at that chart and I started to think to myself, how many people have the balls to kick a 52-yard field goal or 55 or 57 or whatever it is? That's not 3 seconds left in the game, some Tom Dempsey shot. I'm talking about a decision to do it that, you know, believing in your kicker. I mean, how many kickers make 50-plus field goals in this league? Usually there are three or four or five guys in any year over the last 25 years that you'd say, I think that guy will make it, and if he's in Denver, maybe more. But, you know, all of these percentages have been weighed out. The guy who sent me the chart was the last 10 years of field goals. Percentages of field goals from any distance, what the numbers were. And there's so many numbers that it really does come down to, do I think my kicker can make it? Is my punter better at pinning him in? Do I feel better about my defense right now? And all of that happening in real time on Ian Eagle and Charles Davis, the coach has to make the decision, and then we sit here 3 days later and think about it when they've been role playing this. They do this in May and June, right? Like, they role play these war strategies all year long. This isn't something that John just goes through with 8 minutes left on the clock, right? I mean, Vrabel has contemplated that, and Tomlin have contemplated that decision for all of their lives as well, right?
The good coaches have. I'm not so sure all coaches are doing as much as they should be and have all the information to make those decisions. So, again, as I said, we always look at the scoreboard, and we always look at it in real time as though the scoreboard is going to remain that way. And that's making the assumption that you're going to score, say you're down 10 points, you're going to score a touchdown and a field goal. But that also means what? You're having to make stops multiple times and prevent the opponent from scoring. So, again, I'm talking about it in kind of a universal standpoint. Bring it back to what happened in the fourth quarter. As you mentioned, Justin Tucker misses the 52-yard field goal. Him trying a 52-yard field goal is different than looking at that in a vacuum, looking at the
it is a 59.6% kick. There you go.
But it's much higher for him.
For him, it's probably an 80, right?
Sure.
Okay, sure.
And that's always something to consider when you're talking about going for two compared to kicking an extra point. You have teams like the Ravens, presumably, although, you know, off the top of my head, I can't remember what their two-point conversion success rate is this year, but based on the fact that they have the running game they have, and based on the fact that they have Lamar Jackson, they're a team that you go for two more frequently. Why? Because when you go for two, as opposed to kicking extra points, what does your success rate need to be to justify going for two? Over 50%, right? Or right around 50%. You think of extra point. Why? Because if you get one out of every two, that's 2 points anyway. So you're making up for kicking extra points. And oh yeah, extra points now, having moved back, are not 100% or anything, or they're not close to 100%.
Is getting 2 yards at the end zone, is that a 50% play?
I mean, depends on the team, but you know, but that's also what you need to decide as an organization, as a coaching staff, as an analytics staff, to look at how you do and figure that out. So, okay. Getting back to specifically what we're talking about.
We're allowed to nerd it out. It's the playoffs. No, we can't talk about this next week, man.
I'm adding some context into the decision now. No, Justin Tucker misses the field goal. If you're Tennessee right there, you're thinking, wow, we have an opening here. The greatest kicker in NFL history just missed a 52-yard field goal. We're down 4 points with, at that point, there was a little over 12 minutes to go. So if you're Mike Vrabel and you're the Titans, you're thinking, hey, this is our chance, right? So they get a first down. Tannehill throws the ball to A.J. Brown on second and 10. They're just past midfield. Derrick Henry, who had not done anything on the ground all day against a Ravens defense that just had a tremendous effort to slow him and to keep him a non-factor. He gains 8 yards on first and 10. Remember, that was the one he almost busted. I think it was, what was it? Derek Wolf just kind of grabbed him by the ankle and got him down, because it looked like that was going to be one of Derrick Henry's 30-yard runs where
he was about to move into the next year.
Off. Yeah. So instead, it's an 8-yard gain. It's second and two from the 40-yard line. We haven't even gotten to fourth and two yet, Nestor. So think about this. Second and two. Why would you not give it to Derrick Henry again when he just had his best run of the day? Albeit only 8 yards, but still, They throw incomplete on a deep ball. All right. Third and two. Derrick Henry, 2,000-yard rusher, right? You should be thinking at this point on third down right now, you should be thinking this is four down territory. We're going to go for it because you just open up the possibilities. How many times did we see, especially go back 2 years ago when Lamar Jackson and this offense, we talked about, I was like bumper pull, right? You talked about it was like the electronic football where they were just, I mean, really, really run heavy. How many times did we see that team run when they would be on the opponent's side of the field? It would be third and eight, third and nine, third and 10. And how many times did we see them run the football? Now, in many of those instances, they might have been thinking, yeah, we're going to put ourselves in a little bit better field goal range. Or if we get 8 yards on third and 10, we're going to go for it on fourth and two. So again, that's why you need to be thinking about these things, planning them throughout the week. So you're prepared. So your play caller knows that, okay, third and two from the 40-yard line, we're going to go for it, right? So that opens up my menu of plays a little bit more. So Tannehill throws incomplete, intended for Jonnu Smith. Deshaun Elliott with the big hit there. It's fourth.
And by the way, you talk about play calling. Arthur Smith's like showing off, right? Like he's trying to get a job. Well, yeah, on second trying to cut the Ravens' throat. Like literally on second and two, that's him showing off, right? Right? Literally.
I don't think he's thinking about getting a job at that point. He's thinking about wanting to get a first down and winning a game and understanding what goes with that in the big picture. If you're an offensive coordinator that has aspirations of climbing the coaching ladder,
handing the ball off to the 265-pound running back. Well, so conservative.
And again, what are you doing here? And it's funny, Nestor, if you actually go back, if you recall the fourth quarter in Baltimore in week 11, Tennessee was driving and they had a similar fourth and short situation, and they had a couple plays where they did not give the ball to Derrick Henry and they ended up settling for a short field goal. And that was a mistake that I thought, even though they won the game, I thought that was a bad decision by Mike Vrabel in that instance. But it's fourth and two. You have a little over 10 minutes to go. You're at your opponent's 40-yard line and you punt the football? Really? What are you really gaining out of that? And look, I know Vrabel was asked about it after the game, and he said, well, I felt good about my defense. This was a terrible defense in Tennessee this year. You could not ask the Titans to play any better against the Ravens offense than they did. And that's talking in terms of the Ravens having rushed for 230 plus yards and Lamar Jackson making plays with his arm and doing what he did with his legs. But they'd given up 17 points to that point. Are you really going to put more faith in your defense than your offense that was top five caliber this year, than your 2,000-yard rusher on fourth and two? And look, that's not to say you had to give the ball to Derrick Henry there, but I'm at least having him line up in the backfield and making the Ravens think that he might be getting the ball there and what that could mean for play action on a fourth and two situation. I didn't get it. And Brett Kern ends up punting. He only punts it to the 15-yard line. So you netted 25 yards of field position rather than giving up a chance to move the chains and get inside the 40-yard line, keep Lamar Jackson and the Ravens running game off the field, and you're in a position where
you got to make a play and you can go get some points is what you're saying. Make one play and you can take,
and not just getting points.
And if you don't make it, they get the ball at the 40-yard line.
At the 40, right.
Fair enough.
And that's the thing. So you ended up punting. You get a 25-yard net punt to the 15, and the Ravens run two plays, and guess what? They're at their own 36 already. Dobbins runs for 12 yards, and Lamar Jackson throws to Marquise Brown for 9. So that field position that you just value to such an inappropriate degree, considering what the game situation was, you lost it in roughly two plays. And
we've seen that happen so many times.
You don't have the football. And that's the other thing, too. And that's what I wrote at BaltimorePositive.com back in week 11 when they elected to kick a short field goal when they had a chance to convert and to score a touchdown. They had an opportunity to really take control of that game, and they gave it back to the Ravens. Now, the difference was week 11, the Ravens didn't take advantage, and they gave it back to Tennessee, and then, of course, Tennessee scores, and we saw how the rest of that game played out, and the Titans won the game. Give them credit. That doesn't mean they made great decisions down the stretch. But this is a team known more than any other offense in the league over the last couple years as what? Long, sustained drives where they can just crush your soul. If you give the Ravens a lead in the fourth quarter when their running game is going right, they crush your soul. They take your soul. Your chances of losing the football game diminish to a dramatic degree because they're just going to keep it away from you. So Vrabel elects to punt on fourth and two from the Ravens 40. And the Ravens end up keeping the ball for, what was it, roughly 5 minutes, I think it was. Drive was actually 5 minutes 41. So, and then Justin Tucker converts on a 51-yard field goal to make it a seven-point game. So that was just absolutely the wrong thing to do. I'll say it to him, blue in the face. That was a situation where a head coach, and look, I think Mike Vrabel overall has done a great job in Tennessee. And the Titans have, you know, they won two playoff games last year. They won the division this year in the AFC South.
But gathering his players on in the middle of our logo 8 weeks ago, notwithstanding, right?
Right. Well,
that probably wasn't a great decision.
And by the way, we'll get to that in a second.
We'll get to that in big.
But just to finish my point, there is a perfect situation that a head coach did something that is, and look, that's conventional thinking for decades. When you're talking about football,
Belichick would have done
play
that, right?
Play field position, pin them back. No, you go for the first down there because your defense has already played above its head, quite frankly, considering what they were statistically. And are you really going to trust that they're going to make stops and you're going to get the football back? The chances of that happening compared to converting a fourth and two and
with Derrick Henry, by the way.
Like I said, you didn't even have to give the ball to Derrick Henry.
Dude, I got to write a book because Harbaugh's brother threw the ball four times at the 1 yard line. Like, these are the decisions that you look back and you say, all right, you know, they are the differentiators between winning and losing. I mean, look at that Lamar play, right? Like, that one play where Lamar broke the. If that play doesn't happen, I'm not sure we're talking about going to Buffalo today.
Yeah, you never know. And as much as, you know, we try to pick apart one official's call, whether it's an offensive pass interference call or one that's not called early in the game, every play in a football game impacts what happens after that. So that's where you can't just go back to just one specific play and say, oh, that cost in the game.
It's never the same novel after that.
Right? Exactly. I mean, things will change. Play calling will change based off of that. So I still look at that as just what was a colossal missed opportunity. And as much as John Harbaugh got criticism for the 2 fourth-and-ones that the Ravens went for in last year's playoff game, Mike Vrabel punting on 4th-and-2 from the Baltimore 40, way more egregious than either of those unsuccessful, albeit correct, decisions that John Harbaugh made, in my opinion, on those 4th-and-ones last year. Again, you don't just base a decision on the result. You base it on the process and knowing what the information is, knowing what your win probability is going to be. And look, that sounds really nerdy and people will scoff at that. And look, that doesn't mean it works out every time. As I mentioned, Tennessee won that game in week 11. I think Mike Vrabel absolutely made the wrong decision to kick a short field goal in the fourth quarter rather than go for it on fourth and short. So it doesn't mean that those decisions ultimately are the deciding factor either, but they're part of the equation. And that's why coaching matters. And that's why I think Mike Vrabel did the Ravens a solid when he decided to punt on 4th-and-2 rather than go for it. And then you give the Ravens all the credit in the world because they took the ball back and they held it for nearly 6 minutes and they kicked a field goal and they're up by 7 points and then sent their defense back out there to finish the game.
He's Luke Jones. He is Luke at WNST.net. He'll be roaming around the Owings Mill Zoom rooms here this week, and I will be roaming around Buffalo and shuffling off the Buffalo on Saturday night as the Ravens, the unlikely upstart Cleveland Browns, have sent the Ravens up to Buffalo instead of going to Kansas City this week. We're trying to figure out both of these things. On Lamar and just for where his star is and taking the whammy off of him and the rest on him, that's probably the biggest story in the end, right? Is that all the teammates said this was Lamar because Lamar's the one that has to live with not winning a playoff game. It's not that Marlon Humphrey doesn't win playoff games or Ronnie Stanley or Orlando Brown or anybody else. It's all on Lamar. And I guess that's the way it is when you're the MVP of the league, right? I mean, same reason the Mahomes better not take a dirt nap this week to the Browns, right?
Yeah, I mean, that goes with the territory. And look, lots of the criticism of Lamar Jackson has been ridiculous. Some of it has been completely fair. And I think it was interesting to kind of note that Lamar Jackson just turned 24 a few days ago. So maybe a little bit of perspective, and not maybe, definitely a little bit of perspective in order in how we talk about this and how we judge quarterbacks and how we define quarterbacks. And it was noted earlier this week, and I noted it at BaltimorePositive.com and in some of my writing. Peyton Manning was 0 for 3 in his first three trips to the playoffs, trying to win a postseason game. Eli Manning lost his first two postseason games. Those guys won 4 Super Bowls between them. So it's just a reminder that what a quarterback is at age 23 or 24 is not what he's going to be at age 25 or what he's going to be at age 30 or what he's going to be at age 35. And by the way, that doesn't mean anyone's guaranteed of winning either. Dan Marino never won a Super Bowl. Dan Fouts never won a Super Bowl. Warren Moon never won a Super Bowl. And you're talking about Hall of Fame quarterbacks there. So nothing is ever guaranteed, but there's no question that, I mean, this was massive for Lamar Jackson. And I think Marlon Humphrey said it best. I mean, Marlon Humphrey's been around since 2017. He was a team MVP a few years back. He's been to the Pro Bowl twice. He was an All-Pro selection in 2019. He said, yeah, I was excited to get my first playoff win, but I was actually happier for Lamar. And he explained it because of what you just said. The quarterback gets more blame unfairly. But on the flip side, and that's not to say Lamar Jackson doesn't deserve a ton of credit for what happened on Sunday, because he was the best player on the field on the offensive side of the ball and ran for all those yards and made spectacular plays that he can only make. But the quarterback also gets more credit than he deserves on many occasions. So, you know, and these were things that we talked about with Joe Flacco before 2012 happened. We asked over and over and over again, can Joe Flacco lead the Ravens to a Super Bowl? And many people thought no until it happened. And then after that, people still wanted to be skeptical about it. So the narrative now shifts from, can Lamar Jackson lead the Ravens to a playoff win? Can Lamar Jackson lead the Ravens to a double-digit deficit comeback victory? Yeah, he can, because he just did it. Now it becomes, can Lamar Jackson do it again? Can Lamar Jackson lead the Ravens to a Super Bowl? The answer is yes. That doesn't mean it's going to happen this year, but Sunday was a reminder of, as much as we do talk about the playoffs being different and understanding that what happened in the regular season does not mean it's going to happen in the postseason, at the end of the day, it is still just going out there and playing football. And it's a matter of being able to play with composure and to not panic and to not think, here we go again, after you're down 10-0 late in the first quarter. And we saw Lamar Jackson do all those things. As I mentioned in our previous conversation, the 3rd-and-7 completion to Mark Andrews to close the first quarter, go back and look at that throw. That throw was every bit as great as throws that Patrick Mahomes makes or throws that Tom Brady's made or throws that Joe Flacco made back in the day. That was a fantastic play by the quarterback, rolling out to his right and throwing the ball down the field for a big gain to move the chains and to calm his football team down when they were down by 10. And, you know, people are thinking it deep down, here we go again. Is this going to happen again to us? So he played with great composure. I mean, obviously the highlight touchdown run will be the play that people remember in terms of, you know, the highlight plays that stick out from this 20-13 win. But I'll continue to go back to the best throw of the day that he made, which was that strike to Mark Andrews at the end of the first quarter that moved the chains. It allowed the Ravens to take a deep breath, slowed the heartbeat, and they got a field goal on that drive. And, you know, from that point, they're down 7, no big deal. And it allowed the defense to settle in and rest up a little bit after a rough first quarter. And, you know, it put everyone in a position now where we're not talking about the Ravens with this 6-year playoff win drought. We're not talking about all these guys who haven't been tested. We're not talking about Lamar Jackson and, you know, for all the success he's had in the regular season. What about January? They have a January win now. Now, the pressure doesn't subside. It changes. It shifts.
They pretty
now
much had one last year, by the way, too, right? I mean, you know what I mean? When you get the bye, that was kind of my point at the beginning of all.
Sure.
I went to bed on Sunday night and I thought, oh, man, they're right where they were last year, except they're on the road and they're an underdog. You know,
and now they're better tested than they were a year ago. So you have that under your belt. So, but you're absolutely right. And that was the point of what I wrote at BaltimorePositive.com, that, you know, what they were able to do on Sunday put them right back in a position where they were 365 days ago. And that means they're a totally legitimate right there with everyone else Super Bowl contender. That doesn't mean they're going to win. That doesn't mean I'm guaranteeing a victory in Buffalo. That doesn't mean if they beat the Bills, they're going to go to Kansas City and beat the Chiefs. Because
Whoa. Are you saying the Browns can't win in Kansas City? Or are you going to say that later in the week?
We'll see if that – I'd be surprised.
Dude,
let's put it that
way. Dude, how about this, man? We win on Saturday night, right? We're feeling good. You and I are doing radio Sunday morning. I fly back from Buffalo. We're going to be the world's biggest Cleveland Browns fans once.
Go figure. What a time to be alive, right? I mean, hey, give them credit. I mean, in all seriousness, and look, there's more focus on what happened with the Ravens this weekend, and as there should be here in town. But what Cleveland was able to do without their head coach, I kept thinking over the course of, especially the first half where, I mean, things are just nuts. And I'm thinking, okay, what's the over under on number of drinks that Kevin Stefanski's had now? You know, is he shotgunning beers? Is he, you know, is he opening up some bourbon and having a couple glasses, you know, just remarkable for them to do what they did without their head coach, having barely practiced over the course of the week. I mean, it's, you give them credit, but at the same time, it's funny. I was talking to a friend of mine a couple weeks ago, and I made the joke, and this is when Pittsburgh, of course, things had turned sideways for them already. And this was before the comeback win against Indianapolis that kind of appeared to settle the tide for them, at least temporarily. Turned out it didn't. But I joked that the Steelers kind of remind me of the 2017 Orioles, where they started out, I think they were 12 games over 500 in May and looked real good. And then by season's end, they were the worst team in the AL East and one of the worst teams in baseball. Well, in the first half of Sunday night's game, Pittsburgh turned into the 2018 Orioles because they were just absolutely woeful. But give the Browns credit. Do I think they're going to go to Kansas City and beat the Chiefs? No, I don't. I don't at all. But in the same way that we talk about the Ravens differently now, after they won a playoff game, you do put a little more respect to Cleveland's name now. I mean, they won a playoff game. I mean, for 18 years, we were talking about them not even.
When I think of the Browns, I think Final Four.
it's wild, right? So you never really know. And I mean, Tennessee is a great example of that last year. The Titans barely got in as a 9-7 team. And then a couple weeks later, they're playing in the AFC championship.
Well, look at the Jaguars. Blake Bortles, for crying out loud, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's. That's why they play the games, and that's why we love this. And as much as guys like me fancies himself on trying to figure out what's going to happen, I don't know. I'm wrong lots of times. So, I mean, I thought we'd see the Ravens score 30 points in Tennessee. I picked 30-23 Ravens. So
imagine
clearly,
the daily double, the Washington football team and the Cleveland Browns both being in the playoffs. I mean, you know, it took playoff expansion to make that sort of thing happen, Luke.
Yeah. Well, it actually didn't, though, when you think about it, because Washington won via winning a historically terrible division, and Cleveland was the number six seed. So, you know, we saw some teams, you know, we're going to see some teams now with it being a seven team field. We're going to see some teams that don't belong. And you kind of, you know, look at the Bears, for example.
I was getting ready to say the Bears. They didn't belong.
So, I mean, clearly, you know, that number seven seed is going to be, you know, that's going to be some 8-8s. And on occasion, that could even be a 7-9. Now, this year in the AFC, however, you had three wild cards that were 11-5. So this was one of those rare years where, all right, you can deal with a seven team field. But again, begrudgingly, you give the Browns credit. I'm not a believer that they're going to go to Kansas City and beat the Chiefs, but I thought Pittsburgh would win on Sunday night. So, and most people thought Pittsburgh was going to win on Sunday night, especially given the COVID challenges that the Browns had. So you give them credit, but now it's on to the next challenge. And for the Ravens, it's going to Buffalo against a darn good Bills team that is going to give the Ravens everything they can handle.
Given all the issues of plagues, insurrections, maniacs in the White House, second impeachments, and I brought my pin with me here for everybody this week, so keep the message strong around here. Let's keep democracy where it is. The Festivus for the rest of us and a 24-degree Saturday night in Buffalo, I'll take it, Luke Jones. I'll take it this year. You know, I mean, this is better than the alternative of taking the, taking the dirt nap the way that six other teams did over the weekend. So for us, move on, eight teams, four games this weekend. Luke's going to be out and about in Owings Mills and Zoom press conferences. I'm going to be around all week following Democracy, along with former Baltimore County Executive Don Mohler. You can find all of our work. We've done some incredible work this week. We talked to Calvin Ball down in Howard County. We've talked to Stuart Pittman in Anne Arundel County. Spent some time with Johnny O in Baltimore County. Also spent some time with Adrian Jones down in Annapolis, who was our Speaker of the House, talking about safety and other issues in Annapolis right now during a week of consternation here in America. So we've got it all covered. You find it all at BaltimorePositive.com. You can find me, Nasty, at WNST.net or Ness at BaltimorePositive.com. From Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and all over the internet, we are WNST.net, AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Festivus for the rest of us in Buffalo here at WNST.